As we enter the second week of Lent, I think it's particularly important for us to renew our appreciation of what Lent is all about. And so my objective during this homily is to try as best as I can to give you an overview of what's going on liturgically. And the goal is to have you understand better why the worship services are structured the way they are when you come to Mass during Lent. As you know, Lent is 40 days, patterned on the 40 days that Jesus spent in the desert, patterned again on the 40 days that Moses spent with Israel in the desert, patterned on the 40 days of rain that Noah, the flood of Noah, happened. And so during these 40 days, what the Catholic Church tries to do is to give us our faith concentrated, and what is true all the time is basically concentrated so that we spend not just 40 days giving up stuff. That's okay. But Christianity is not about giving up stuff. It's about what you're going to do when you give up what you give up. You see, giving up stuff for Lent is supposed to free you from something that you are maybe abusing. For example, some people abuse food, and we need to deal with that through fasting. Some people may abuse television, some people may abuse shopping, some people may abuse different things, abuse work by working so much that you don't have time to think. And so the issue becomes, once you let go of something, what the Catholic Church wants you to do is to make sure that you focus your attention. And part of what focusing your attention is in focusing on the central message of Christianity. And it's going to tell you the whole story during these 40 days. Now, I will never forget years ago that I had a conversation with a lady who came to me for some spiritual advice because she was a seeker. She was not particularly a Catholic. She was a kind of a nominal Christian. And she asked me a basic question that I think is so important. The basic question was this: Father, I hear all this talk about, are you saved? Are you saved? Are you saved? Saved from what? For God's sake, why do I need to be saved? I'm fine. And everybody's going, are you saved? Are you saved? Are you saved? Well, that's a really good question. Because my contention has been that the problem with a lot of Christian proclamation is that at first you don't get it. You don't get what it is, like this young lady. What is it that I'm supposed to be saved from? That's why I compare it periodically. I like to compare it to a person, and you've heard me say this a gazillion times, to a person who is swimming in a swimming pool having a great time, and a lifeguard jumps in and swims over to them and says, I'm here to save you. And you go, thank you. I appreciate it. That's a nice thought, but I'm okay. Thank you. And then when that person leaves, you look at your friends and you go, he's a nice guy, right? But what happens if you're alone 5 minutes later and you're paralyzed and you start drowning? And the same dude jumps in, swims over to you, and says, I'm here to save you. Same guy. Same message. What happened? All of a sudden you understand that you're in trouble. The problem with us, the majority of us, is that to a large degree, we have been able to tone down through, and thanks be to God that we have, through science, we have toned down a lot of the suffering that people used to experience in times past. Even as little as a century ago, people would experience tremendous amounts of suffering that were not being able to be mitigated by science. And it's a great thing that we have. But what happens now is that since we are able to avoid a lot of the, quote, sufferings that we went through before by going to a doctor, we forget that we're still in trouble. And that there is the trouble that we're in, no doctor, no science will ever be able to mitigate. And what is the trouble that we're in? The first trouble that we're in. You're going to die. Now, you might be saying, well, that's obvious. Yeah, that's obvious. But you don't really get it. And so since you're going to, it's like the guy swimming in the swimming pool. You're going to drown. But since you don't get it yet, you say to the lifeguard, hey, I'm fine. But you are going to drown. And not only that, the expectations that you have of your life will not be met. Your life, and most of us live in, oh, if this is going to happen in the future, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. When you get old, part of what they call the midlife crisis is that you suddenly realize that all of the expectations and the dreams and hopes that you had of life ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. I'm convinced that that's why church is filled with old people. You know why? Because the older you get, you start going, wow, is this all there is? Is this it? What happened to all the dreams, all the things that I was going to do, all the things that I was going to be fulfilled in? They're not happening. Okay? You're going to experience a frustrating life by the end of your term. Now, please understand, there will be moments of happiness, tremendous moments of happiness, but there will also be frustration and settling. You'll have to settle because life is not going to fill you up. One of the things that I always like to remind people of is, if you were to ask Jesus, why did you come? Jesus would say to you a direct answer to that question. I came that you might have life and have it to the full. What does that answer imply? That you don't have it to the full. That you have it to the half. That the hungers of your life, the hopes and dreams that you have, exceed what you're going to get. And not only that, you're gonna die. And as you're breathing your last, you're gonna look around. It says there's a famous passage in the play Man of La Mancha, which is about Don Quixote in the famous Spanish novel. And he says in one of those moments, he says, I've held men in my arms as they were dying. And in their eyes, the question, searching, and asking, why? Why? And then he says, I don't think they were asking why they were dying. They were asking why they had lived. When life itself looks absurd, who knows where the madness lies? And perhaps to be too practical and to concentrate only on what's going on now is the maddest of all. And so what happens is being saved is all about coming to the realization, seeing life from afar. The problem we have, a lot of us, is we keep busy. We entertain ourselves to death. We busy ourselves to death. So we don't see what's going on from way up above. And once it happens, we're sort of, what's this? Being saved is about Jesus coming to us and saying, when God created you, He did not mean for you to live a half a life, an absurd life, empty of meaning and purpose on the big scale. And He did not mean to create you so that after a frustrating experience of life, you would die and let it all go to nothing. That's what we're in. That's what salvation is all about. And when God, because we understand that God is love, He will not allow creatures that He created and He loves, He will not allow us to live a frustrating life half full and ultimately die in despair. That was not God's plan when He created us. And so what happens is that God Himself says, I will come to your rescue. I am not going to let you do this to yourselves. I am coming to your rescue. And so when Jesus becomes human, when God becomes human in Jesus, He is basically coming to rescue us from utter and ultimate doom, even though we don't see it yet. It's kind of like a child, okay? Imagine a child playing in the middle of the street, and he's having fun, and mom comes and grabs him and takes him inside, and he's screaming, and why are you taking away my fun? That's God. And he's looking at us, and he's going, you're going to crash and burn, man. And we say, oh, no, but I was having so much fun. That's why God allows your life to fail. You know, we have these vast plans of success. And most of the time, if you reach them, they're not that big of a deal. You go, is that all there is? Or you crash and burn. And when you crash and burn, you go, why, God, don't you love me? I asked you to help me to win the lottery. You didn't help me. Or stuff like that. Okay? So Jesus comes to our rescue. God is Jesus. Jesus is God. You know, one of the things that I'm amazed, and today we have one of the most beautiful scenes. Jesus is transfigured. He goes up to a mountain. And remember, this is a guy. I mean, this is a guy that looks like to be a super wise man. But the apostles find this guy really strange. I mean, think about this. One of the things that I enjoy doing, I love studying non-Christian religions. I love studying Buddhism and Hinduism and Zen and Taoism, all kinds of religions. Right? It's a hobby of mine. Never in the history of the human race has any one of the main religious figures ever said what Jesus said. Do you remember when Jesus is with his apostles one time and he says to the apostles, who do people say that I am? Now notice the question. He wants to know not what other people think. Hey, what do people think of my teaching? What do people like me? He doesn't want to know any of the teaching things. Who do people think that I am? And the apostles are totally bewildered. They have no idea. If you think of other religious figures, for example, the Buddha. The Buddha never says he's anything. He says, I found a way to enlightenment, to nirvana. Muhammad says, an angel of God spoke to me And this is what he said God said. And then you go on to the prophets. Thus says the Lord. It's not ever about them. But all of a sudden you have this Jesus, and the question is not, how do people like what I say? Does my teaching make sense? He says, who do you think I am? Who do you think I am? And the apostles, they're bewildered. I mean, this is a guy who goes up. You know, look, anybody can say, you know, you have heard it said, and I say, do this. And he teaches with authority. Meaning, Jesus actually would quote the Old Testament. He would quote the Old Testament, and then he would say, you've heard it said that. And then he would say, but I tell you that. Now, can you imagine the arrogance of that? He's quoting the Old Testament, the word of the Lord, and he's saying, I'm telling you this. This is a guy who the apostles were hanging around with, and they were on a boat, and they were going to die in the middle of a storm. And the guy wakes up, and he looks around, and he says, stop it. And the storm goes, and the apostles look at him and says, who is this? The strangeness of Jesus is the issue here. And when he goes up to the mountain in this moment, what's he doing? He is preparing the apostles for the final confrontation. You see, what's happening during Lent is, and during the entire ministry of Jesus, is the preparation of an ambush. Jesus, notice what he's doing. The moment he comes down from this mountain, Jesus says, now we must go towards Jerusalem, where I'm going to be killed. I'm going to be arrested, I'm going to be tortured, and I'm going to be crucified. And, he says it in the gospel today, then I will rise from the dead. And the apostles have no idea. What the heck does he mean, rise from the dead? Nobody knew. And then, do you remember Peter? Peter, when Jesus says that, I'm going to get killed, Peter does what is normal. What's normal? Oh, don't do it. I don't want you to get hurt. And Jesus turns to him and says, get behind me, Satan. But what I love is the next sentence. The next sentence says, you are thinking like man does, not like God. Now notice, Jesus all of a sudden is saying normal human thinking is not like God. What's he saying? He's basically saying there's something more important than being happy. And I often ask people, what do you want? And people say, I want to be happy. Is there nothing more important than being happy? Well, no. Yes, there is. I can always imagine Jesus kneeling down the night before he dies at the Garden of Olives. And he is about to be crucified, and he knows it, and he goes, Father, please, I just want to be happy. I want to be happy. There's something greater than that. And you know what it is? That Jesus is about to confront the power that keeps all of us in chains. What are the chains? The chains are unfulfilled life, life to the half, suffering, and death. And he is about to confront them. And he goes to the top of this mountain to encourage his disciples, because he knows something horrible is about to happen to him. And when something horrible is about to happen to him, he wants them to know a little bit more about who he is, so they won't be totally wiped out. And so immediately he starts heading towards Jerusalem. Think about that. He's about to be arrested, tortured, and killed. And he is going exactly to the place where he's arrested. He knows he's going to be arrested. Now, I often think, God, if I were going to be beat up this afternoon,
Target parking lot.
Would most of you now say to me, don't go? I said, most of you. Some of you might say, hey, Father. Anyway. But most of you would say, no, don't go. But this guy is going there, and then at the Last Supper, I'm always amazed with this. He turns to Judas and says, go do what you have to do. This is a guy who's walking in. He's not a victim. He's setting up a trap. And then how do the Pharisees know where he's going to be? Because he doesn't even change the place, and Judas knows where they go, and so he doesn't even change it. Allows himself to be arrested. Allows himself to be crucified. Look at what's happening with Lent. The church is giving you a concentrated message. And the concentrated message is, we're in trouble. Even though you may or may not realize it. And what every Sunday, you're going to see Jesus getting closer and closer and closer to the ultimate confrontation that occurs on Passion Sunday, on Good Friday. And on that day, he confronts the ultimate evil. I often imagine evil to be like a volcano that is got all this magma underneath. And it's ready to blow. And the magma underneath is evil. It's the pressure of the world's evil underneath. And I always imagine God's finger coming down from heaven. And there's the mountain. And God does this. And you know what happens? An explosion. The explosion comes not from the tip, but from the pressure. And the pressure is the pressure of human evil. And it explodes. And what you have at the point of explosion is the crucifixion. That's what's the point of explosion. And what happens? That God says to Jesus, let it happen. Let it happen. Because I will not let it stand. I will not allow evil to triumph. And in the resurrection, what Jesus does is he reveals our future. He says, your future is not empty. Your future is not an unfulfilled life. Your future is everything. I came that you may have life and have it. To the full. That's what this is about. That's why it takes old people to figure it out. Okay? Because it's huge. It's huge. And sometimes children or immature people can't see because they're lost in the little things. And so as we go towards Lent, through Lent, yes, give up whatever the heck you want to give up. But make sure that you focus, because what's happening during these 40 days is that the church is saying, focus so that you see what's going on. This is our rescue. And whether you know it or not, you're drowning, or you're gonna drown. And this is your rescue and your promise for the future. God, why do you think we stand up here and say, this is the gospel, the good news of the Lord?